This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution condemns the West for his silence on the ongoing Israeli onslaught against the Palestinians in Gaza. 166 days into the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip, the death toll of Palestinians is nearing 32,000, mostly women and children. And the Israeli army fails to intercept a Yemeni missile over the port of Eilat, which, according to its CEO, has been paralyzed by Yemen's Red Sea operations. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemies have long attempted to bring the country's economy to a collapse, but to no avail.
For long years, the adversaries have been trying to bring us to our knees economically. Very seriously, the adversaries have been doing this. We have seen this in the antagonistic moves of the United States and its cronies in the course of the time. They mean to see the economic collapse of Iran. They intend to bring the country to its knees in terms of economy. Of course, on the back of determination and efforts of our youth and lots of attempts and efforts made both by the people and the statesmen, the enemies have failed to do so. And they will still fail to do the same thing.
Ayatollah Khamenei added that Iran has witnessed outstanding improvements in various domains in the past year, despite efforts by the enemies to instill hopelessness among the people. He made the remarks on the occasion of the Persian New Year. The leader elaborated on this year's slogan that is surge in production through people's participation. He underlined that the growth in production will be possible only with the participation of all people. Ayatollah Khamenei further highlighted the great capacities that Iran enjoys, noting that such potential, if properly used, will ensure further economic success. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader touched on Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, calling it the most pressing issue before the world.
Now, as for international issues, the one with the highest priority is the issue of Palestine, the issue of Gaza.
The leader added that the bloodshed unfolding in Gaza exposes the true face of the so-called advanced Western civilization. He said the West has not only been standing idly by in the face of the massacre of Palestinians, but it has also been supporting Israel financially and militarily. Ayatollah Khamenei also praised the resistance front, saying the events happening in West Asia have revealed the capacity and power of the resistance against Zionism. He added the regional resistance groups have thwarted the plots of the Israeli regime and its Western backers, especially the U.S. Israel keeps dropping bombs and firing artillery shells on Gaza, further indicating the regime's specific goal to commit genocide in the besieged territory. Here is a video showing critically injured Palestinians at a hospital, following fresh airstrikes on the Nusayrat camp in central Gaza. There were new airstrikes on the Barrage refugee camp, also in central Gaza. Over three dozen Palestinians lost their lives in the latest Israeli bombardment of the two camps. The Israeli military also once again opened fire at Gaza aid seekers, killing at least 30 of them. It took place when the regime forces targeted a gathering of popular committees formed to secure the transfer of aid from the Kuwait roundabout to Gaza City. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza since October the 7th has topped 31,900. Over 74,000 have also been injured. Volunteer medics have been working hard to provide aid to Palestinian civilians since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. They often describe the situation in the besieged territory as horrific, genocidal, and inhumane. Recently, a British surgeon who spent some time in Gaza has shared his distressing observations in an interview with journalists. Let's take a listen.
And I spent 2 weeks at Al-Aqsa Hospital, and I think it's fair to say I wasn't remotely prepared for what I saw. I saw the most appalling atrocities, and I saw things that I never would have expected to have seen in any healthcare setting. Some days we didn't have any surgical gloves, so we had to wash previous ones. Sometimes we had no surgical drapes. Many days we had no morphine. On many occasions, no antibiotics. So really limited resources, knowing that actually a lot of that, those resources were probably in depots somewhere or maybe in lorries queuing up outside at Rafah, but could not be distributed. And this is what is so urgent about the need for a ceasefire, is that the only way that aid that's being delivered to Gaza, and we welcome every bit of aid, the only way that aid is going to get to where it's needed is if there is a ceasefire. Spent some time a while ago looking up the definition of genocide in a variety of dictionaries, and what is going on in Gaza fulfills every single definition of genocide that I have read.
The Israeli military has admitted that a missile fired from Yemen hit the vicinity of Eilat port in the occupied Palestinian territories. That came after the Yemeni army spokesman announced the operation against the port.
The missile forces also launched a number of winged missiles at Israeli targets in the Umm al-Rashash area in southern occupied Palestine.
Yahya Sarieh said that a cruise missile was launched from Yemen's territorial waters in the Red Sea toward the occupied territories. The regime's Iron Dome and Arrow missile defense systems failed to intercept the missile. There's still no report of casualties or damage, as the military claims the missile fell in an unpopulated area. The head of the Eilat port told media that ship traffic at the port has been paralyzed since Yemen's anti-Israel operations in the Red Sea began in mid-November. He said that every month between 12 and 13 ships entered and departed the port, but the number is now zero. We talked about the Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei in terms of some of the statements that he made on the Nowruz messages on two occasions, such as Iran witnessing outstanding improvements in various domains, a lot of it economically based. Let's bring in some analysis into the picture and have Hakimeh Sagaberia join us. She's an academic and political analyst. Welcome to the program and Happy New Year to you. Tell us about the importance of Iran's leader's speech, where a lot of it had to deal with the economy, but also in the specter of how the enemy's efforts have failed, since that has been one of their motivations, is to bring Iran to its knees economically.
Yes, Iran has faced hybrid warfare ever since the inception of the Islamic Republic of Iran, basically since the victory of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and economic warfare has been part of that. Of course, there has been other types of warfare in that hybrid situation. We have had military warfare and other kinds of war, including propaganda, which, the military aspect of it has been basically neutralized. But the economic aspect and the propaganda aspect are still ongoing. And there is, on the part of the enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran, there seems to be some hope that they can achieve some of their goals from those two routes, the economic route and the propaganda route. So basically, I think the gist of the speech of the leader of the Islamic Republic today was tackling those two fronts. And of course, Iran has been trying to overcome some of the economic problems of dealing with this hybrid warfare for the last, as I said, from the inception of the Islamic Republic, but also especially after the end of the Iran-Iraq war, when this hybrid warfare concentrated on the economic aspect. You have had the whole nation of Iran under economic sanctions. Basically, the whole people of Iran have been punished for their support of the Islamic Republic or for basically being Iranian, being part of this picture. So the effort is to neutralize this aspect of hybrid warfare as well. Of course, Iran has been successful in neutralizing the economic warfare in terms of making it, because the goal was to make the Iran's economy paralyzed. Basically, there has been talk of paralyzing, debilitating sanctions. But we have not seen those kind of problems in Iran. You know, Iran has been able to move around the sanctions, maneuver basically in a way that anyone who comes to Iran sees that everything is, you know, is the affairs of the country are running. It's not that we have a failed state here, but because Iran is you know, a nation that has a lot of potential for progress, and that was part of the leader's speech as well. You know, Iran wants to have a resilient economy in a way that you know, outside pressure cannot not only halt its progress, but not even diminish the speed and the strength of the progress that we are talking about. So the aim is to you know, have a resilient economy, an economy that is strong enough from inside, that is basic, that you know, in the end, basically the economic aspect of that hybrid warfare is going to be neutralized as well. So we would be in a situation where you know, Iran could stand on its feet in every aspect, military wise, you know, economic wise, and you know, in terms of, and of course, one of the main aspects of that is the you know, the people of Iran. So the propaganda warfare has to be neutralized as well.
Thank you very much.
I would like to apologize. My power runs out. I see that I have some problems with my power right now.
We actually reached the end of our time here, but thank you for your contribution. Hakim Esar-Abiriyar there, academic and political analyst. Thank you so much. Israeli raids on the occupied West Bank have become almost daily occurrences over the past several months. The regime troops abducted several people after conducting fresh incursions into several Palestinian towns and neighborhoods. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil earlier joined us with more details.
Israeli forces stormed several areas across the occupied West Bank. Let's remind our viewer, on Tuesday, a Palestinian carried out a shooting, wounding two Israeli security officers. One of them was shot and wounded, and he was in serious condition. This happened near Gush Atzion, between Beit Lahem and Al Khalil. Today, the Israeli forces stormed these areas in Beit Lahem and in Al Khalil, and the Israelis have stormed as well Jenin, because the hometown of this Palestinian who carried out the shooting and was shot and killed is the Al-Hashimiyya town in Jenin. The Israelis stormed Al-Hashimiyya town, stormed several cities, several towns, and refugee camps around Jenin, and a number of Palestinians had been detained there. The Israeli forces also stormed Nablus, and they surrounded a house in one of the neighborhoods there. Clashes continued for several hours, according to statement from the resistance groups. And at the end of the day, one Palestinian was arrested. The Israeli military said that this Palestinian, originally from Jenin as well, he is a wanted Palestinian by the Israeli forces. The Israeli soldiers stormed the Al-Jalazon refugee camp near Ramallah, and a number of Palestinians had been detained. The Israeli forces also raided Jifna town near Bir Zeit, and a number of Palestinians had been arrested there. The exact number up to the moment is still unknown, but as every day we have been documenting the detentions by the Israeli forces.
The President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, has traveled to the Austrian capital less than 3 months before the EU elections. She delivered a speech at the University of Vienna, but students there interrupted her speech by protesting against the EU support for the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Her correspondent Dieter Ranisch reports from Vienna.
Colleagues, on the morning of the
80 days before the European elections on June the 9th, President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, visits Vienna. In addition to discussions with government and parliament representatives, she met with students at the Faculty of Law at the University of Vienna. Students could ask questions and rate them using an app. Among the most repeated questions were, why isn't the EU stepping in to ensure that humanitarian aid is allowed to enter Gaza? Students also asked Metsola, when will you call for an arms embargo to be imposed on Israel? But the event's moderators deleted both questions from the app in an act of censorship. Nonetheless, the students asked questions concerning the US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Metsola answered, we are the only European institution calling for a permanent ceasefire. However, this was followed by another intervention from the audience in support of Palestine.
We don't need language, we need an arms embargo.
Metsola refused to comment.
I'm going to take the next question.
Instead, the audience interrupted her.
Free Palestine!
Free, free, free Palestine!
Free, free
Palestine! Students held up a banner and distributed leaflets informing about the genocide and demanding freedom for Palestine. Censoring the pro-Palestinian voices, the students were escorted out of the hall, and the live stream from the European Parliament Media Center was interrupted during the protest. In a speech during their protest, activists said,
instead of holding Israel accountable, instead of instantiating an arms embargo and demanding for the genocide to stop, the EU is continuing its hypocritical humanitarian aid policy to deflect from the complicity in the murder of more than 30,000 Palestinians.
While Metsola continued to promote the EU policy inside the hall, police held the pro-Palestinian students for an hour and informed them of legal action for public disobedience and unlawful assembly.
The European Parliament President Roberta Metsola met young people at the law faculty at University of Vienna. They promised to discuss the most critical questions of our times. However, the organizer said that critical questions on the US-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza were not welcome. Dieter Reinisch from Vienna.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi made a televised speech on the Persian New Year. As well, he said his administration did not sacrifice the future of the country by focusing on minor issues. Raisi touched on the efforts of his administration made to boost the country's economic and industrial growth. He wished a prosperous new year and said that his government will do its best to control inflation and to increase industrial production. The Iranian president also highlighted other domestic issues and pledged that his administration will complete half-finished projects. He added that the government will direct the available funds toward production and infrastructure. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also issued a congratulatory message on the Persian New Year, also known as Nowruz. In his message to all nations celebrating Nowruz, Guterres said the occasion brings together millions of people across generations and nations. He added that the annual event promotes dialogue, good neighborliness, and reconciliation. Noted that Nowruz reinforces peace, human rights, and dignity, which are actually the goals and the values of the UN. He also called for bridging divides and fostering unity. That does it for this edition of World News. Thank you so much for being with us. Bye-bye for now.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English programme, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. Between border visits and rallies, Joe Biden and Donald Trump are dueling to control the narrative on immigration, placing the issue and Mexico's role in it at the heart of the upcoming election. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Florida's governor signed bills on Friday, 15th of March, that increased the prison and jail sentences for immigrants who are living in the United States illegally if they're convicted of driving without a license or committing felonies. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is a frequent critic of the Biden administration over its handling of the Mexican border, sending Florida law enforcement agents and National Guard members to Texas. The Republican governor of Florida, who ended his attempt for his party's presidential nomination recently, has also flown immigrants who enter Texas illegally to Massachusetts and to California. Ron DeSantis said, "We do not tolerate illegal immigration, let alone lawlessness committed by illegal aliens who shouldn't be here in the first place." The bills I signed on Friday further enhance Florida's capabilities to uphold the law. The driver's license bill increases the maximum sentence for anyone convicted of driving without a license twice or more from 60 days in jail to a year. This also applies to U.S. citizens and immigrants in the country illegally. But in Florida, undocumented people are barred from obtaining a driving license in the first place. Some immigrant support groups have criticized the bill, saying it endangers the public safety, as many immigrants are barred from getting a driving license will still drive. They just won't have been tested or buy driving insurance. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 19 states and Washington, D.C. issue driver's licenses to immigrants who are in the country illegally. Renata Bozzetto of the Florida Immigrant Coalition said in a recent statement, "True safety is achieved through comprehensive measures such as driver education, issuing driver's licenses to all qualified drivers, and access to insurance, not through punitive enforcement." Bozzetto added, "Rather than criminalizing individuals, the Republican legislature in Florida should work to invest in initiatives that promote driver safety, address disparities in the licensing process, and ensure equitable access to transportation for all residents." Another bill increases the maximum prison sentences for immigrants who are convicted of felonies after having been previously deported from the country for illegal entry. For example, such immigrants convicted of low-level felonies like simple burglary or car theft would face a maximum sentence of 15 years in prison, instead of the 5-year sentence that is the crime's normal maximum. Such immigrants convicted of mid-level felonies like aggravated battery would face a maximum sentence of 30 years instead of the 15-year sentence that is those crimes' normal maximum. and high-level felonies like armed robbery could now carry a life sentence for such immigrants instead of the normal maximum sentence of 30 years imprisonment. British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. Between border visits and rallies, Joe Biden and Donald Trump are dueling to control the narrative on immigration, placing the issue and Mexico's role in it at the heart of the upcoming general election. In tasking Mexico with reducing arrivals at the border, the United States has given its neighbor leverage over U.S. political discussion. Underground, this has meant many migrants find themselves stuck in Mexico, running a gauntlet of extortion and violence as they try to make it to the other side of the border, to the United States. Ari Sawyer, a researcher at Human Rights Watch, said it used to be that the Darien Gap was the most horrific part of their journey, but now people are saying that Mexico is the worst, adding that Mexico is the new jungle. There are two components to Mexico's central role in U.S. immigration. Many Mexicans are themselves going to the United States, and Mexico remains the top nationality among immigrants. Then there is Mexico's status as the United States' immigration enforcer, a role that has evolved over the course of Andrés Manuel López Obrador's presidency, starting in 2018, as the number of migrants trying to reach the United States through Mexico has risen tremendously. Compared to before the pandemic, detentions of migrants in an irregular situation have risen fourfold, reaching almost 800,000 cases in 2023. According to Tonatiuh Guin, former commissioner of Mexico's National Institute of Migration, detained people should be taken for a migration office to be reviewed. Meanwhile, consulates should be contacted and the decision made on as to whether to repatriate them. But he says if the official detention numbers are accurate, then it would be far beyond the capacity of Mexico's institutions to process them. In any case, deportations have not risen in step with detentions. On the contrary, they collapsed last year to a little over 50,000 cases. In the first year of López Obrador's administration, deportations as a percentage of detention stood at 88%. In 2023, they stood at 6.8%. What is happening instead, according to human rights organizations, is that migrants are being put on buses and sent back south, sometimes all the way to the border with Guatemala. Rafael Velasquez, Mexico's director of the International Rescue Committee, said, if you're detained in Mexico City, you go to Acayucan. If you're detained in Acayucan, it's Villahermosa. And if you're detained in Villahermosa, it's Palenque. Adding, in other words, you go one step back.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. Imam Ali alayhi salam was brought up under the care of the Holy Prophet Muhammad when he was just a small child. And so in this manner, the foundation of the moral and spiritual education of this magnificently intelligent child was based by the Prophet of Islam himself, the greatest educator of all mankind. Imam Ali's mental faculties were to an extent that he believed in the Holy Prophet and his mission at the tender age of 8. Therefore, Imam Ali, contrary to the other companions of the Holy Prophet, had never worshipped idols and never partook in the unreasonable demands, the oppressive actions, or the unjust acts of the Arab chieftains. Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So, dear friends, again, we are in the holy month of Ramadan, this beautiful month, with some trials and some difficulties and some hardships, but a month which very humbly, I believe, that anybody who is not able to witness this holy month is very, I guess, envious of those who are able to witness this holy month, and to be able to fulfill the rights and responsibilities and duties that we are capable of in this holy month of Ramadan. So we're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. We find, of course, that one of the traits and characteristics of Imam Ali alayhi salam is this idea that he was an individual who was smiling. His face was very soft, approachable, if you will. And these are things that we find, you know, historically and extrapolate based upon the various traditions that we find in which the imams talk about having a cheerful face and smiling. So these are kind of things that are important. Sometimes we think that the imams were always frowning, or they had this mean face and they were walking around town, you know, with their eyebrows scrunched, when the reality is very different. These were individuals that they were so beautiful, and their faces were so illuminated that they would glow while they walked in the streets, and they were approachable, and their faces were soft. They weren't hard like tyrants or oppressors or criminals or, you know, gangsters and thugs and these kind of people. We find they had very soft faces and they were very approachable. People wanted to come and speak to them. People wanted to know who these individuals were. So that's one aspect we find of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And it's interesting that he talks about this even in his various statements. He says that cheerfulness is on the believer's face. You can see that the believer is very serene, tranquil, at peace. And this is something that I think is really important, even though there's other characteristics that I wanted to talk about, but, you know, kind of running
running out of time, so I guess we'll just stop at this idea here. You know, many times, yes, we have problems in our lives. We have difficulties. You know, we're dealing with a lot of stuff on a daily basis. But that should never prevent us from carrying ourselves in a serene manner, in a tranquil, peaceful manner, in a cheerful manner, you know? Sometimes we're so caught up in our own lives that we forget that perhaps other people have problems as well. I mean, we forget that maybe other people are suffering, other people are sad. And so when you realize that perhaps other people are sad as well, and this is where the point comes into play, when you are cheerful, despite having your own problems, when you smile at others, despite having your own problems, you bring happiness to another individual who is most probably also facing trials and difficulties and hardships and is also sad. So you bring them happiness, and in return, what will happen? They will smile back at you, they will be cheerful, and they will bring you happiness as well. Just one last point, even though we're probably out of time, and that's that being cheerful and being happy does not mean being kind of crazy and exhilarated and, you know, laughing out loud. And a very serene, peaceful, calm cheerfulness is what is being said. A beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma fastajib du'ayi واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائي بحق محمد.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
And now we invite you to listen to Fayyaz Ja'far.
That's why Allama Majlisi in Bahar al-Anwar, he states that submission or ma'rifah of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt is that tomorrow, for instance, that if Imam Sahib al-Zaman, he comes into this masjid, and he stands in front of every single one of us, and he tells you, look at this apple. The right side of the apple is halal, and the left side of the apple is haram. That it's the responsibility of every single one of us to submit toward it unconditionally. Don't say, but how is the right side halal and the other side haram when they're part of one dimension in its entirety? No. ma'rifah, absolute knowledge of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salatu wasalam, is to submit unconditionally that if the Imam tells you put your sword away, you put your sword away. That this side of the apple is halal and the other side is haram, that's it, it's finished. And what made Malik al-Ashtar the recipient of such divine knowledge from Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, was this love, was this loyalty, was recognizing the wilaya of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen in all of its unique capacities. The historians, they write that when Imam Ali alayhi salam is now the governor, or he's the fourth caliph, and he establishes his government in the holy city of Kufa, his first governor of Egypt was his adopted son Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. But due to the onslaught of Muawiyah from Damascus and his attempts toward overtaking the region of Egypt where Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr ruled, Imam Ali alayhi salam thought that he would make a strategic move toward placing Malik al-Ashtar, who was really smart, who was really chivalrous, who had a lot of bravery, but most importantly, he had a large army ready behind him to protect Egypt from any sort of onslaught from Muawiyah. So he writes a letter toward Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, relieving him of his duty, and then he goes towards sending Malik al-Ashtar toward Egypt so that he's able to take over the governorship of that region of his caliphate. What happened was that Malik al-Ashtar, on his way toward going toward Egypt, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam writes toward him this famous letter, letter 52 or letter 53 of Nahj al-Balagha, that many of us are obviously very familiar with. Malik al-Ashtar takes the letter, he goes toward Egypt, and when news began to spread in Damascus that Malik al-Ashtar is going to become the governor of Egypt, and at the same time he's going to bring forth his large army contingency, Muawi began to have a little bit of fear. So Amr ibn al-As goes toward Muawiyah. Of course, Amr ibn al-As, the close confidant of Muawiyah, he goes toward him and he says, hey, if we allow for Malik al-Ashtar to go toward establishing the governorship of Egypt, we're going to be in trouble. So they create a ploy, they make a system that on the journey between Kufa and Egypt, many people back in the day, they take a lot of rest stops, right? Like today, for instance, if I'm driving from New York City toward Toronto, it's like an 8-10 hour drive. Every couple of hours, I need to stop, I need to get some coffee, I need to use the restroom, I need to compare Tim Hortons to our Dunkin' Donuts and all of those sorts of things. And you take his rest and you spend some time there. Back in that day, they would go and they would sleep in tents, they would park their camels and their horses, and there would be people who would sell and distribute food and so on and so forth. Amr ibn al-As, he pays somebody in this journey between Kufa and Egypt, and he says, when you see Malik al-Ashtar come with his big contingency of followers and his army and his military personnel, give him this food mixed with this poison so that he's unable to reach Egypt. And in the outskirts of the city of Cairo, we come and we see that Malik al-Ashtar was poisoned and he was killed, and he was never able to act upon the instructions given toward him by Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. But nonetheless, those words of the Commander of the Faithful live forever in reality.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who
Iranian weapon. Part 2.
Iran's defense industry experts have a big concern. Are they able to quickly protect the country against such air raids? These systems and machines are all manufactured and produced either by the US or UK. The range of their missiles is very limited, and their radars are hard to repair. But for now, all of Iran's defense capacity is restricted to such facilities, and the country has to advance its scientific potentials as well. The Rapier and Hawk systems. Rapier is a British short-range surface-to-air missile launcher, and Hawk was an American medium-range surface-to-air missile system. Iran had purchased them before the revolution. The missiles barely reached the required range to hit Iraqi fighter jets during the war.
Fire.
Now, these are Iran's only tools to fend off a possible attack by countries like the US. Of course, Iran had also bought a type of air defense system from the country where this man's pictures were painted on its walls, from Libya. During a symbolic parade, the systems are loaded for delivery to Iran, but they were not made by Libya. The Soviets had built them and named them SAM-2 and sold them to Libya. However, after SAM-2 was imported to Iran, it immediately stopped working after Libya's support was terminated. Gaddafi had decided to join the club of Saddam supporters. Now, Iran must have launched and repaired the systems by itself. Thus, Iran was coerced to reverse engineer foreign radars and build the first national radar at home. In 1983, the US invaded Iraq, and Iran must quickly acquire the systems that will put the entire country under a dome of protective waves. Iran is going to buy the SAM-5 from Russia. Russia's S-200 or SAM-5 eventually joins the Iranian army. SAM-5 is also handed over to the defense industry for study. Research on the concept of radar had been started for a long time and continued. Men and women came to work on the plan from all universities in the country. For the first time in its history, Iran wants to completely entrust its military needs to young students. The Mersad air system is a result of the trust. Mersad means ambush. The Iranian ambush is an example of the reverse engineering of the American Hawk. The first step to conquer the sky step by step. This is 2010. The Mirsas launched their missiles one after the other. The missiles are called Shaheen and are domestically produced by Iran. The missile control room is also domestically produced. This is an important secret. This room is the big secret of Iranians. Without having information about it, it's impossible for the enemy to easily disable it. In today's world, if the defense systems are not indigenous, the fate of Iraq will repeat itself, and Iran is aware of this very well. The Mirsad missiles were quickly updated. Mirsad 1, 2, and 3. The Mirsad air defense system consisted of three main components: missile and launcher, detection radar, and engagement radar, all of which in the initial versions were reverse engineered from the American Hawk air defense system. This system is of medium range, and its operational range has been calculated to be up to 40 kilometers, but it's not meant to stop there. The Shaheen missile quickly turns into Shalamche with a speed of about 4 times the speed of sound. Shalamche can hit any target at an altitude of 18 kilometers. This means Iran is gradually approaching the highest altitudes. The firing of Shalamche from the Mirsad systems leads the then defense minister to respond to the U.S. claims. They claim to have the ability to attack Iran. Iran has an important theory called the defense dome. However, the defense dome has many needs that cannot be met by the Shalamche system alone. It requires special radars that can withstand the electronic warfare of the major powers. Perhaps something on the level of American air defense systems. But this is a big claim. American fighter jets fly at high altitudes, and they cannot be detected with ordinary radars. Will Iran build its own defense dome? In the 2010s, the country enters a new era in which the turmoil of sanctions will reach its peak, and it's the economic issues that will attract more attention than the military ones. In 2013, the United Nations Security Council imposed sanctions on Iran based on a proposal by the U.S. and its Western allies. One of the branches of the embargo is the purchase of weapons. It means Iran will soon face an important challenge regarding one of its purchases, the S-300.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.